So I'm not going to get up here and talk about the biggest sort of international case that I've ever had in my entire life that everybody already knows about. I'm not going to talk about my incident with Judge Judy, where somebody had broken into my apartment as an undergrad and was actually living in my apartment and had had baby shower, and I had to take them on Judge Judy to get justice. I am going to talk about a situation and the first felony jury trial that I ever had. It's really funny because when I came to Baltimore, it was in about 2004 when I was getting ready to graduate law school, and my husband and I were college sweethearts, and he brought me to Reservoir Hill in 2004, which is about 12, 13 years ago, and he brings me to a dilapidated vacant shell that was vacant for about 20 years, and he points to a vacant shell and he says, "Marilyn, this is where I want to live." And I look at the open air drug market and the trash in the streets and the number of vacant houses in the street, and I say, "You are crazy." And he says, "No. Everything that we want to do, it's about having the vision and the foresight to realize the potential." And I tell you that story because that was one of the best decisions that I ever made, is investing in my community and how important that was for me, especially as a prosecutor, starting my career as an assistant state's attorney for Baltimore City. I was so proud, you know. I wanted to be a prosecutor. I worked for the U.S. Attorney's Office in Boston and the U.S. Attorney's Office in D.C. and the Suffolk County Homicide Unit. I was a criminal defense attorney as a student, and this is what I wanted to do, to reform the criminal justice system. I was fully invested in my community. So that evening, when my husband and I, we had revamped our house, and we rehabbed our house, and we built our dream house. And we were in Walmart, and he had failed to take out the trash, so he pissed me off, right? I was really angry he didn't take out the trash, and so ladies, you know how we are sometimes. We try to get on their nerves, right? Well, as a law clerk, as in the state attorney's office for the 5 unit with Diana Smith, Judge Diana Smith, I had been in the Firearms Investigation and Violence Enforcement Division. And I had worked there, and they had confidence in me, and I had just passed the bar. And because of my work ethic, I believe, they had given me a case for an individual who was a felon in possession of a firearm. And not only was this my first felony case, you know, I just passed the bar. I hadn't even gone to district court, right? They also attached another case to it, a misdemeanor case, a fleeing and eluding, reckless endangerment case, a reckless driving case. So I was really excited. But this evening, I go out. I'm at Walmart with my husband, and he failed to take out the trash, so I just want to be a jerk. So I'm going down every single aisle, and I'm going to make him go with me, right? And so I'm shopping, and as I'm shopping, I'm going back and forth, and he's like, "Marilyn, can we please not go down every aisle? Can we, come on, I'm ready to go." And I'm like, "No, you didn't take out the trash. We're going to go down every aisle." And then I happened to look over. And it was crazy because when you're in the district court, I had gone to district court, but you all understand how the court system works. There's postponement after postponement after postponement. So I had this felony case and this attachment of a misdemeanor case. And it had been postponed at least 3, 4, 5 times. So I had seen this defendant on numerous occasions, right? But I never really paid much attention. So I'm in Walmart, being a jerk, and I walk down the aisle, and I happen to look over, and I see somebody who looks familiar. And my husband is in a fraternity. You know, we're young. We're very active socially. I'm like, where do I know this person from? It doesn't dawn on me. Where do I know this guy from? Right? So he's staring at me. And so he then looks over, and he's with someone else. And he starts whispering to that person. And then they both look at me. And then it dawned on me. Our eyes met. And for a moment, my heart sank. This was the same individual that I was prosecuting, lived in my community. And it was kind of scary, because I felt like I wasn't in control of the situation anymore. And so, of course, I was being a jerk. I say, "Nick, can you come here? Come here, come here, come here." And he says, "No, you're being a jerk. No, no, no." I say, "No, I need you to come here. I need you to come here." And so he says, what do you want? I say, that's that guy. Remember I told you about the guy that I've been prosecuting? The case has been postponed numerous times. That's him. And he's now whispering to his friend, and he's staring at me. And so he looks over, and sure enough, the guy looks away, but he looks back at me. I said, well, we're going to go out. Let's just leave. Let's leave. We go to the aisle. We go through the aisle, and he's at a different aisle. He decides he's going to leave at the same time. And so while we're at the checkout counter, he's staring at me, and he's looking over. And his friend is now staring at me and looking over. And I say to my husband, I say, okay, well, let's get our stuff, and then let's just hurry up and go outside. It's not a big deal. You know, let's just go outside. And so we go outside, and the man, he follows us. And his friend gets in the car, and as we're approaching our vehicle, he pulls up to us and slows down. And Nick stops and looks at him. Is there a problem? And they pull off. Now, I had been and worked in the U.S. Attorney's Office, and, you know, I had worked in the firearms investigation unit, and for the first time, I felt vulnerable. And I tell you that story today because it's something that stuck with me. Having that vulnerability and being in that position and understanding and recognizing living in the home of witness intimidation where the stop snitching mentality began, it's something that stuck with me and every case that I prosecuted thereon. I eventually went to court with that guy, and Nick jumped in the car and made sure we went a different direction so he didn't follow us home. But I prosecuted that case, and I was able to successfully convict this individual on the misdemeanor. The felony, I can tell you, I lost. I lost that after we tried to get the officer from Trinidad, and, you know, I had the services of the FOP. I don't think they'll ever help me again, but that's another story for a different time. And it was extremely telling for me as a prosecutor because being in that vulnerable position, it helped me understand the sacrifice that victims and witnesses make each and every day for the betterment of our communities, sacrificing their families, their safety, their sense of safety in environments in which, you know, we take for granted. And so that's something that I've taken with me and I've learned, and this is why as state's attorney I fight so hard for victims and witnesses of crime. You know, we're getting ready to celebrate our winter solstice, the second annual winter solstice, which benefits the victims of crime on December 1st. We honor community members and, more importantly, community members who are so selfless that they come forward and they testify against really bad individuals. And so I'm here tonight because I learned a lesson. And it was only in that moment, in that fearful moment, that I realized how important our job is as prosecutors, but more importantly, how we can't do our jobs without those individuals with the courage and the audacity to step forward and to testify against the really bad individuals and the very small number of individuals that define the negative perception of our city. So with that, that's my story, and that's something that I've fought very hard for as state's attorney, and I will continue to fight, but it was a life lesson that I value and will always remember. Thank you.